Did I have you at murder or did you have me at murder?
I don't know. I think you had me at murder.
I thought you had me at murder.
I don't know.
Thanks for tuning in to You Had Me at Murder, a true crime podcast. We're your hosts, Kristen
and David.
Before we get started on this episode, I just wanted to cover a few things. An apology to whoever I offended when I repeatedly got Shanann's name wrong on the last episode. I was not being insensitive or disrespectful to the victim when I said whatever to David when I was corrected. It was more of a me saying whatever. Why can't I get this right? I realize not everyone who listens knows my personality, so I just wanted to apologize again for that. We did practice saying her name several times before the episode. My brain just wasn't processing it.
It's like every time you read it, you just...
You
just reverted back to the way you first pronounced it.
I mean, in all fairness, every time I speak with the school nurse, she gets my kid's name wrong, and I wouldn't give her a 1-star rating. So, yeah. And to the person who said that our podcast was a junk cast, we're still new at this. But we'll take your non-constructive criticism, and we're going to run with it and make a good podcast.
That's right.
I also wanted to mention another up-and-coming podcast to you guys, called Shadow Sides. Shadow Sides covers a lot of true crime cases, from everything like R. Kelly to Jane Doe cases. The host, Jordan, is currently covering the case of Trinity Love Jones. If you haven't heard of that case, it's about a 9-year-old girl who was discovered in a duffel bag in California, and her mother's boyfriend has been charged with her murder. But obviously, there's a lot more details than just that. Just a small update on Operation Varsity Blues. Lori Loughlin's daughters dropped out of USC for fear of being bullied. She was kicked off of the final season of Fuller House.
And all of everything to do with Hallmark, I believe, is what I read.
And you found out why William H. Macy wasn't charged. It was because he wasn't involved in the first daughter, and then they didn't end up doing it for the second daughter, which is the one he was caught talking on the phone about.
Yeah, or vice versa. But yes, they didn't have enough evidence.
Okay, that makes sense. Just to clear that up from the last episode. Our website is in a good place finally, so check it out. youhadmeatmurder.com. We're still working on it, but it looks presentable at the moment. Thanks to our listeners for helping the podcast grow tremendously this week. Our most recent episode has over 200 listens.
Which is big time. I think we had less that we had 200 listens total before this episode.
Yeah, the 200 listens happened within the first 48 hours as well, so that was really exciting. And it's made the total plays over 500 this week. Obviously, we put the podcast out there hoping people would listen, but never expected it to happen as fast as it has. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
We've had listeners all over the U.S., in Canada, the U.K. I hope that's you, Dan TDM. Australia, South Africa, Mongolia, New Zealand. We're thinking of you people right now. Ireland, Norway, Finland, Portugal, Sweden, Mexico.
All over the place. All over the world. You're worldwide.
We are everywhere.
Global.
And we're so excited.
It's very cool to think that people are listening to us in other parts of the world.
It is. Growth is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the Grinch's heart, the podcast grew 3 sizes that day. Now on to who we're really here to talk about tonight. Catherine Susan Genovese. Now before anybody tears me apart for saying her name incorrectly, Genovese is pronounced Genovese. I got that from her brother from a documentary he did. I originally thought her last name was pronounced Genovese, which it would have been if they were straight from Italy, but the family was American Italian.
Also known as Kitty.
Yep. And we're traveling back to 1964 in New York City, New York.
Cool.
Now let me tell you a little bit about Kitty, because I think she sounds awesome. She was born on July 7th, 1935. She grew up in an Italian family, and she was the oldest of five kids. Now, I love Italian families. When I was a kid, my best friend's family was Italian, and they always had the best food. And their family always seemed really nice, and like they really loved each other. And now as a grown-up, I have another clan of Italian people I like to hang out with, and they are so much fun. They love everyone, and there's always really good food. So I'm pretty sure I would have wanted to be Kitty's friend when I was a kid or even as a grown-up. She attended an all-girls school where she was recalled as being self-assured beyond her years and having a sunny disposition. She was voted class cut-up her senior year.
And just like you.
That was me. In 1954, Kitty's mother witnessed a murder on the streets of New York City, so the family moved to Connecticut, which is very ironic because of how Kitty dies. Kitty stayed behind with family to prepare for her upcoming wedding. The marriage didn't last long and was annulled by the end of 1954.
This was Kitty's wedding? Kitty had gotten married?
Mm-hmm. Okay. During the rest of the 1950s, Kitty worked a series of clerical jobs that she felt was unfulfilling, and she began bartending by the late 1950s. In 1961, she was arrested for bookmarking.
Bookmaking. Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Bookmaking?
Yeah, bookmaking.
Yes. Oh, I must have read it wrong, and that's weird because when I Googled, I was like going to get the definition of bookmarking, and it was talking about marking, you know, a bookmark. And I was, this definition must have changed in the last 50 years, 60 years.
No, okay. making books, making bets.
Okay. Betting. Cool. You learn something new every day. Well, she had been taking bets on horses from customers at the bar. She was fined $50 and lost her job. $50 back then is equal to about $475 today.
Dang.
Yep. But I don't blame her. You got to have a side hustle. And betting on horses at a bar makes sense. I mean, what else do? You eat peanuts and bet on horses?
Could have been making a podcast.
Yeah. The Betting Levy Act of 1961 made it legal for bookmakers to open betting shops for betting operations separate from the racetrack. They were made to pay a levy tax on the profits. So it sounds like Kitty, her side hustle just didn't involve paying the necessary taxes.
Right.
But Kitty was a baller back then. She worked double shifts at her next job at Eve's 11th Hour Bar and was soon managing it. She made about $750 a month back then, which is equal to $5,000 a month today. When her father asked about finding another husband, she said, "No man could support me because I make more than a man." And I absolutely love that. Kitty sounds like she was a badass. She was saving money to open her own Italian restaurant. I'm like, Kitty, come back. In 1963, Kitty met Mary Ann Zielonko at Swing Rendezvous, which was an underground lesbian bar. They quickly fell in love and moved in together in Queens, which was considered a safe and peaceful area to live.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think it is anymore.
Oh. Well, and just so everyone knows, they lived on the second floor of this apartment building, and that will make more sense later in the story. Kitty sounds like a bunch of our friends mixed together. Like, if we were alive back when she was around, I feel like we could have easily been her friend. And her life, it just sounds really fun. And if you went around with the name Kitty instead of Catherine back in that time, you were probably just fun.
Right.
I think she must have just been fun. Kitty left work at Eve's 11th Hour Bar around 2:30 to 3 a.m. on March 13th, 1964. She had a 45-minute drive home. While she stopped at a traffic light, a car pulls out of a parking lot and followed her all the way home. Around 3:15 or so, Kitty parked her car about 100 feet from her front door. The other car parked at a bus stop down the street. Kitty was making her way to the apartment, and a man wearing a large brimmed hat shadowing his face approached her with a hunting knife and stabbed her twice in the back. Kitty screamed and ran towards the door. Many neighbors heard her screams, but only one recognized it as a scream for help. Robert Moser yelled from his window to let that girl alone. The man was spooked by Robert and runs away. Witnesses claim to have seen him get in his car and drive away, but he ends up staying close by, and once he realized the police weren't coming, he hunted Kitty down a second time.
Yeah, did he forget something, or did he just, he was just going back for
more?
He
was just going back. Kitty was lying in the hallway just inside her apartment building. The man stabbed Kitty at least 12 more times, raped her, and stole the $49 from her wallet and took off for good. A friend of Kitty's, Sophie Farrar, heard the commotion and came to her aid, holding her in her arms until the ambulance arrived at 4:15 a.m. Kitty died en route to the hospital. Police knocked on Marianne's door early that morning and told her Kitty had been hurt and took her to the morgue to identify Kitty's body. It was the couple's 1-year anniversary. It's so sad.
Oh, that is sad. And how long was it between him, the initial stabbing, and him coming back?
Witnesses said 10 minutes.
Okay.
The total attack took place over about a half an hour.
Okay. I remember reading something about half an hour, and I couldn't remember if it was a half an hour between, like, had, it's crazy to me that somebody witnessed this, yells at the guy, and then just does nothing.
I can't believe he would come back.
So he gets yelled at. That the guy who yelled at him doesn't do any sort of follow-up there. So she's stuck in this alleyway or on the sidewalk or wherever she is for long enough for him, the killer, to have left and come back again.
Yeah. I had read one thing that he said he thought she was okay because she did get up, or she did crawl away. So he thought, he didn't know she'd been stabbed. So, but I guess we'll get more into that. Police interrogated Marianne for 6 hours and badgered her extensively on her sexuality, because this was just such a thing back then. It still is. She was initially considered a suspect because the person closest to the victim always is, but Marianne was quickly ruled out. Kitty had a lot of defense wounds on her, showing she had fought hard for her life, so whoever had attacked her would have more than likely had some wounds as well, and Marianne did not. 6 days later, police got a call about a suspected robbery. Police found a television in the trunk of the suspect's car. The man was Winston Mosley. The man was arrested and admitted to stealing dozens of appliances. He actually admitted to 30 to 40 robberies.
Wow.
He was only 28.
That's
a lot.
I mean, it must have just been trolling around the city.
Mm-hmm. Winston drove a white car, which detectives noted upon questioning him and had remembered being told that the suspect in Kitty's murder drove a white car. Detectives brought this to Mosley's attention, who initially said nothing. When detectives questioned the scabs on Mosley's hands, he admitted that he had killed her and confirmed information only the murderer would know. Mosley gave no motive for the attack other than he just wanted to kill a woman, and he'd said he'd been driving around Queens looking for a victim. He saw Kitty alone at a traffic light and followed her home. He had got out of bed in the middle of the night, leaving his sleeping wife and two sons home to go find someone to murder, and he had no criminal record prior to that.
That's right. I remember reading that he left the wife and kids home, just decided to go out and kill a woman.
Yep. Like, did he go home and take a shower? Like, obviously, he had to, like, did he have a spare set of clothes in the car? I don't know. Winston Mosley's son says he thinks his father murdered Kitty because she was yelling racial slurs at him. Now, call me crazy, but but I don't know many people who are yelling anything out the window at 3 a.m. after working a double shift.
Right.
Like,
Especially a woman driving alone in the 60s.
Right. Yeah. And she's probably thinking about going home and going to bed.
Right.
Whatever. Interrogations down the road with Mosley would reveal two other murders. That was Annie Mae Johnson and Barbara Kralik. Mosley was sentenced to death on June 15th, 1964. The judge over the case said, "I don't believe in capital punishment, but when I see a monster like this, I wouldn't hesitate to pull the switch myself." His sentence was reduced to life in 1967 because the New York Court of Appeals argued that Mosley should have been able to argue he was medically insane at the sentencing trial. His initial trial plea was not guilty, but was changed to not guilty by reason of insanity at the trial. So I guess he didn't get his fair shake during sentencing.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. That I still don't understand, and I've read that before as well. I still don't understand exactly how that works, because you make the defense or you don't make that defense. Like, I don't understand how they come back later and say, "Oh, you should have made that defense."
Yeah. I guess it's part of that appeals process, which is always ongoing, and yeah. I don't know. He later claimed that a mobster killed Kitty. He was just the getaway driver.
It's a little bit of a story change there.
It is.
I mean, especially when it didn't sound like they had to press him too hard for him to just admit it in the first place.
Yeah, it wasn't like they sent him and brought him back in for questioning. This was all in one night. He's right. Just like, word vomit. Here it is. This guy really was a piece of work. And that phrase, piece of work, it reminds me of bless her heart. Like, anytime you hear that, that's never, right. It's never a good thing. Like, you don't want to be a piece of work. In 1968, Mosley escaped from prison. While being transported back from a hospital from where he had surgery to repair a self-inflicted wound. So I think if you're in prison and you do self-inflict and you've murdered someone, they should probably just leave you there. But the jail was taking care of him. They took him to get fixed. On the way back, he hit the transporting officer, stole his weapon, and fled to a vacant home owned by Mr. and Mrs. Kalaga, where he stayed undetected for 3 days. The couple went to check on the home because they had heard in the news this person's on the loose. So they go check out their home, probably not really thinking they're going to find anything. But there was Winston Mosley. He bound and gagged the husband and raped the wife.
Oh my gosh.
He then ran off with their car. He broke into another home and held a woman and her daughter hostage for 2 hours, then released them unharmed. Thank God. I mean, at least he didn't hurt everyone this time. He surrendered to police shortly afterward and was given two additional 15-year sentences, and, to be served consecutive with his life sentence. During his first parole hearing, he told the parole board that the notoriety he faced due to his crimes made him a victim, stating...
Oh, yeah. Total victim.
Yeah. Stating, "For a victim outside, it's a one-time or one-hour or one-minute affair, but for the person who's caught, it's forever." He also said at the same hearing that he never meant to kill Kitty and that he just considered her murder a mugging, because people do kill people when they mug sometimes. Like, what? I mean, maybe he really was insane, because those are insane thoughts to actually say out loud. He was denied parole 18 times, and he died on March 28th, 2016, at the age of 81.
Wow.
Yeah, so he spent...
Cost us a lot of money.
Yeah, and he was in there a long time. The murder of Kitty created a phenomenon known as the bystander effect. Kitty's attack took place over half an hour, but calls to police weren't made until after 4 a.m. Some witnesses claim they called, but the calls weren't given priority. Others claim to have called, but didn't report the severity of the crime. So I guess the people helping didn't really know what they were looking for or how bad it was.
Well, and this is also, I believe, before 911 was created, the New York 911 was created.
Yeah, that's on my list to talk about.
Well.
Others stated that they thought of calling, but that they thought someone else would do it, so they just didn't. Some reported that they just didn't want to get involved. Kitty's murder gained national attention when the New York Times printed an article titled, 37 Who Saw Murder Didn't Call the Police, alleging that multiple witnesses heard or saw Kitty's murder but did nothing to help her. The bystander effect attempts to explain why someone witnessing a crime would not help the victim. Clinical experiments have been done that have shown witnesses are less likely to help a crime victim if there are other witnesses. The more witnesses, the less likely anyone is willing to intervene. Not that this is severe, but the other day, remember I told you I saw that forerunner like in the ditch on the side of the road?
Yeah.
Well, at least 20 people had passed that person before someone stopped to help. And the person that actually helped was actually behind me in line, in the car rider line. She backed up and, like, turned around and went down there. And then the rest of us were watching
and,
out of
and
our...
And you just drove right on by.
Well, it wasn't flipped over, so I figured he was probably okay. But I had just read about this, and I was like, huh. I totally was a bystander effect. I was that person.
Mm-hmm.
After the death of Mosley in 2016, the New York Times issued a statement that called their original reporting of the crime flawed. They said, while there was no question that the attack occurred and that some neighbors ignored cried for help, the portrayal of 38 witnesses as fully aware and unresponsive was erroneous. The article grossly exaggerated the number of witnesses and what they had perceived. None saw the attack in its entirety, which that was one of my initial thoughts as well, is like, how was 37 people going to see this at 3 a.m.?
Right.
And even if you do hear, like, if you're sleeping and you hear something, you might think it was like in your dream, or is it a cat outside? You know,
yeah.
You're not thinking clearly if you're, you know, woke. And it also said that it was very dark at that time. Like all of the, everything was closed. So.
Yeah. But this is New York City, which is also known as the city that never sleeps.
Yeah, that's true.
but who knows how well lit, like,
it was it how, what yeah. it was it like it in 1964? I don't know. Kitty's death contributed to several Good Samaritan laws. This is to ensure that regular people don't ignore strangers in need. And if you act in good faith to assist someone who is injured, you won't be held responsible if your actions actually cause further harm. Her death also led to the 1968 nationwide adoption of the 911 system. At the time of Kitty's murder, citizens had to dial 0 for the operator or the local police station number, which was then relayed to a communications bureau and then passed on to the precinct, which would cause a delay in getting help.
Yeah. I can't even imagine having to go through all... Like, I can...
That sounds exhausting.
I can think of those times when I've called the cops for non-emergencies, and, you know, you're looking up, like, the sheriff's office, and is it the... Who are you calling from these 5 different numbers at the, right. at the sheriff's office for the non-emergency? Yeah, I can't imagine having to do something that, go through that process for an actual emergency.
Yeah. I mean, even today, if you call for something that's like relatively emergent, but nobody's been killed, it could take hours for someone to get out there. So yeah. In this case, if they weren't relaying that this lady's laying on the ground dying...
Yeah.
They might not even have, obviously, they might not come.
Yeah.
But before I wrapped up this research, I wanted to see what happened to Marianne. She is still alive today. I watched an interview that she did in 2016, and she still seemed very sad. You could still see the hurt in her eyes. She said, I was very numb, I would say, from the whole thing. I felt, wow, she was so close, and I was sleeping, and I didn't know what happened, and that I could have saved her, you know? That's what I really think about still. She spoke about good times with Kitty, like spending Mondays with Kitty's parents, and then going to a restaurant called Gertie's in the evenings on Mondays. That's where they would hang out. 2 movies have been made about Kitty's murder, 37 and The Witness. I think 37 is on Netflix, or The Witness. One of them's on Netflix.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I thought that would be cool. My final thoughts on the case. I wish Kitty had made it home that night. I feel like her love story with Marianne wasn't over yet, and her restaurant probably would have been really legit if she had gotten a chance to open it. I'm also glad that they caught Winston Mosley really fast, and that he admitted to it.
Yeah.
And I felt like our justice system did get it right that time. He didn't get to walk out of there, except for when he escaped, but they got him back real quick. And I'm glad that they were able to at least get something good out of what happened to Kitty with the Good Samaritan laws and the 911 made available on Kitty's behalf. What do you think? What do you got to say about this case?
It's just another one of those. There's so many creepers out there. Like, what? Obviously he admitted that he killed two other women. But to just think that... I haven't read or explored anything about the killer's wife. Right. I mean, obviously the kid's trying to come to his defense for whatever reason. But just that thought, again, these things happen and kind of change your perspective on the world. And what if the person you're laying next to, when you think they're getting up to pee, go get a snack, run down to the store and buy some cigarettes, has just gone out, stabbed a woman, drove around for a little bit, drove back, raped her, stabbed her some more.
Mm-hmm.
And then just went home or what? Just crawls back in bed. For him to have been out trolling around, just kind of watching people drive by, picking a person to follow. Was that the only person that he followed that night? And was she the first one?
I read said that he was about to give up and go home because he wasn't finding anyone.
Yeah, it's just...
That's creepy.
So many little things. What if the wife had woken up and just said, no, come back to bed? Or the kids happened to be awake and hear him leave and woke him up? Or, what if Marianne was up and waiting on her, outside? Or, there's so many hundreds, if not thousands, of other things that could have happened, like little tiny things that would have just changed the whole outcome here. But
she wasn't working a double shift to try and open her own restaurant. Yeah. She might have been home earlier.
Yeah. If
don't go outside in the middle of the night alone, women. Not that this was Kitty's fault at all, but you just don't know what's out there waiting for
just
you.
There's just so many creeps out there. Don't make it any easier for them.
And it's sad that that's the way we have to live, but it is what it is.
Yeah. But no, it's a very, very sad story. I had heard a lot about this, but had not heard about how successful she was. And, I had heard about the bookmaking arrest or fine or whatever that, whatever happened with that. But didn't hear that she was balling five grand a month bartending bar and
at 28 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she sounds so fun.
Yeah.
So that is this week's episode. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at You Had Me at Murder. You want to tell them about Twitter?
Twitter. Yes, we have a Twitter set up at Had Me at Murder. So there's no you in that. There's not enough characters for that. So at Had Me at Murder. You can follow us on Pinterest at You Had Me at Murder.
Email us at Gmail, youhadmeatmurder@gmail.com.
And check out our website. Let us know what you think about the website.
It has links to everything, so you don't even have to remember this stuff. Just remember youhadmeatmurder.com, and you'll be able to get to Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram and an email.
Yep.
You can also see a picture of my beautiful face.
just inviting more creeps. We'll scratch that.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.
Kitty's attack took place over half an hour, but calls to police weren't made until after 4 a.m. Some witnesses claim they called, but the calls weren't given priority. Others claim to have called, but they're getting tongue-tied.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.